Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have Courtney and Rose from the Fiction Fixation podcast. It's such an honor to be able to have them here to talk about the 40-year-old version. This movie came out when I was in college. I cannot wait to dive into this scene by scene, seeing if this actually still holds up today. So with further ado, let's go ahead and welcome them to the show. And hey, guys, welcome to the show. I do appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
I love that intro music.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Everybody loves the intro music and stuff like that. We get huge compliments from our guests every single time we do it. So thank you so much.
It was a little dancey dance.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gives you a little bit of a hip-hop vibe.
Yeah.
Pop, right? But guys, do me a favor. Tell everybody about your podcast, about what you guys do. Because I love your podcast. And you guys just dropped your Fight Club review not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so again, we're Fiction Fixation, and we do movie recaps.
Yeah, we do deep dives into movies, occasionally a book, and we try not to review, but we always do. So it was our thing where we're like, we're not here to review, but we're going to. And we just recap the movie. It's kind of our thing where you don't have to see the movie or read the book beforehand. We'll explain it to you.
Yeah, it's, you know... It's I don't know if people remember Spark Notes. Is that still a thing? Mm-hmm. Do you remember Spark Notes? When we were in college and we were tasked with writing like a book report, we didn't read the book. Mm-hmm. We would just look up the Spark Notes. So we're kind of like the Spark Notes for movies.
Right. Kind of like those clip notes of like, okay, what mm-hmm. we're going to talk about X, Y, and Z. And these are going to be the marks that we actually land on. And yeah, I used those times when I was in college. It was actually mm-hmm. helped me out big time.
Yeah, but it's littered with dark humor and banter.
Right. So, yeah, I just made it sound very academic, and it's not that. Don't come with those expectations. As a matter of fact, just lower all the expectations when you come in, please.
Yeah, we make a lot of claims about being scientists and doctors and women in STEM, and we are none of those.
We are never those, no.
And there's nothing wrong with dark humor. I love dark humor. I would actually buy that book. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a perfect book for me.
Yeah. Make a lot of toaster jokes.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, yes.
So I always ask my guests this, and where do you hold this movie as for a nostalgic factor? What was the first time you've seen this movie? Out of 10, I was kind of curious about when was like the first time that you actually discovered the 40-year-old version.
I feel like I saw it in college. I think I was in college when I saw this movie,
mm-hmm.
but I had already been part of the zeitgeist already, so I feel like I was late.
Yeah, it came out in 2005, so I feel like I didn't see it when it first came out. It was probably like 2006, 2007,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure it was on like one of those like TBS or something like that. It was like on, and I was like, oh, I want to watch this, and then I watched it, and then I'm pretty sure like I've watched it with my husband before. When I told him I was watching it earlier, he's like, you've seen it. You don't need to watch it again.
Okay.
So, but no, I was young. I was in my like late teens, early 20s when I saw it.
Okay. And what do you rate this out of 10 for you as far as nostalgia goes?
There was an era of like the Steve Carell, Will Ferrell, you know, sort of movies with like that crowd with Paul Rudd and Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen. There was an era for it, and it reminds me of college. It reminds me of those days, uh-huh. you know, like the same with Knocked Up. It's kind of like half the same cast as Knocked Up.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, I would say for me, like an 8 out of 10 for nostalgia. Yeah. It's an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, for me, I remember it. I was actually in college whenever this came out. I graduated in 04, and I'm in college. And then, you know, I ended up getting this on DVD for the unrated version. Mm-hmm. And I just remember cracking up at the joke, especially whenever he gets goes to the whole entire thing where he gets his chest waxed. And I also remember the behind the scenes stuff on the Today Show. Basically, he really did get that done. His wife asked him, "What the fuck did you do?" And he goes, "I went to work today." Yeah, but you didn't look like that when you left for work. So what
happened? Yeah.
Wait, the waxing thing was real?
Yeah, yes. That was real.
I was watching it, I was wondering if they glued little synthetic pubes all over his chest.
No, that was really his chest hair.
Whoops.
It's funny because I've realized that I quoted this movie for years, but like I didn't realize it was this movie I was quoting, and it was the "Quit Smiling, You Jerk."
Who says that in the movie?
When he's getting waxed, he says, "Quit smiling, you jerk." She's laughing. Like, she is. Because imagine, this waxing had to be done all in one take. There was no redos here.
Mm-hmm. True.
Right.
And the waxer is losing it. She is like half crying. She's laughing so hard.
I feel like I need to rewatch that scene with the knowledge that it really is his chest hair, because I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought it was just funny to actually, Steve actually went through with it, and then he comes home and his wife's like, "What the fuck happened?" It looks like that you just murdered somebody, and now here you are in my living room. What happened? But, you know, and then also I also remember this, me quoting Kula Sayama and not even realizing where it was even coming from, because he also says that out loud whenever he gets his chest hair removed.
Yeah,
and every single time when someone calls me, I go Kumaseyama, and I'm Kumaseyama? Like, right, and they're like, "My," and you know who this is. I'm like, "Oh, I didn't realize I said my name is in Spanish." So, like, yeah, I was actually quoting lines from the movie, not realizing that I was actually quoting lines from it. But yeah, I would have to say it's at least an 8.5 out of 10 for me as well.
Yeah, it screams times where I didn't pay bills.
Yep, same.
So, yeah.
Because here's the thing, though, too. Like I said, I was in college whenever this happened. So therefore, I had that adolescence of the awkwardness and stuff like that Steve had, and things like that, and being around people that I'd never been around before, and things like that too. So I can relate to him, but I can also relate to Seth Rogen's character, who was actually trying to be a screenwriter and stuff like that too. So I have a little bit of Steve, a little bit of Seth Rogen's character in there as well. So yeah, these characters are very relatable too, so that's something I really do appreciate with it too, in just a normal everyday conversation.
I love how they threw Jonah Hill in there just for like a quick like 2 minutes, and for a minute I didn't realize it was Jonah Hill.
He was so adorable. He was so young and plumpy.
He was, and I, you know what, I also forget that he was even in this, especially when he's in the eBay store, and we'll get to that in a few about the customers that's in this movie too, like Kevin Hart showing up, Jonah Hill, but he's like, "I want these boots, but you can't buy them here, but I want them. I need them."
The boy just wanted to try on the knee-high glittery boots, you know?
With goldfish, right. In the acrylic part at the bottom where the soles are, there was like fake goldfish. I hope they were fake goldfish.
Me too. I hope they were too. That would be bad. but yeah, let's go on ahead. We're going to strip this thing out of the way, out of our nostalgic. So let's go on ahead and do it. So hey, everyone, welcome back to Movie Lovers Night. Today we're diving into the ultimate guide on how not to talk to women, but more importantly, how to survive awkward moments that are painfully, hilariously relatable. That's right. We're talking about the 40-year-old version. I'm John, and I can't promise you this episode will leave you with any dating tips, but it'll definitely walk away with a good laugh. And if you're planning on using iCollect action figures as an icebreaker, we're here to lovingly steer you in the right direction. So, without further ado, let's go ahead. Let's break down the 40-year-old version.
Let's do it.
So I like how it starts off with Andy Storitz. He's actually a 40-year-old virgin who lives alone. His apartment filled with his collection of action figures and video games and at a poker game with his coworkers, David Callum, Moj, and Jay. When conversation turns to past sexual exploits, they learn that Andy is still a virgin and resolve to help him lose his virginity. So I liked how it starts off with his everyday routine, and he makes the breakfast. I was like, okay, so this guy really knows how to take care of himself. Yes, he's nerdy like I am. And yes, he's a virgin, but at the end of the day, he can cook for himself, take care of himself. He's not a slob. Yes, he rides a bike, and he also has a job working at the tech store. And then I like how he goes into the store, and you see Seth Rogen there, and he's asking him about his day. But what do you guys think about the opening scene?
I mean, first of all, his self-care routine was top-notch. This dude has a bubble bath in the morning. It was like my dream routine. Like, he woke up, he made himself this amazing breakfast, he worked out. I thought his life looked wonderful, to be honest.
Like, do you realize how many grown men don't know how to do any of that? That was amazing. I'm like, oh, look, he knows how to be an adult. But also, with riding that bike, could you imagine the power that his quads and, like, that his, like, glutes have?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he probably has thighs of steel.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that, though, too, because here's the thing. I like the workout routine and stuff. It shows that he's taking care of himself. He's... And yes, he has a nerdy side. Yes, he can be kid-like, but at the same time, though, he's very grown up, in a sense. But, you know, I definitely like that whole entire kid side of him of, like, yeah, I have all this stuff, but I can also be an adult, too, and take care of myself and show people that I can. And I even have a full-time job. And even, I'm sorry, but if I worked out during the daytime and I'm having to ride a bike to work, I'll be tired. I'll be thinking of this, like, before Uber. But I would actually call myself a Uber just to get to work, because there's no way I'm running a bike after I just worked out and did all that other stuff. I'm like, I'm good to go. but I also like how he walks in the tech store and he sees Seth Rogen's cows over there. He's like, hey, Andy, hey, so what did you do? Well, I went on ahead, made myself like an egg salad, and I got all the stuff. It took me about 3 hours. Goes, oh, that's cool. And...
The most exciting part of his whole weekend was that he took 3 hours to make an egg salad that he ended up not eating. I mean,
salad is delicious, though.
Yeah.
I feel like three hours. Okay, listen, I've decided at like 10 p.m. that I wanted deviled eggs, and then I've made myself deviled eggs at like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
But did you go like, do I really need this in my life right now? Or is it like, okay, I think I'm just going to go on ahead and eat this?
Oh, no, I don't have the part of my brain that goes, do you really need that right now? No, that part of my brain is missing. I ate. Well, see, like 4 deviled eggs doesn't feel like a lot. But if someone was like, hey, would you like to eat 4 hard-boiled eggs? I'd be like, no, that's gross.
That I do agree with you on.
Seth Rogen's character, he always plays the same guy, right? Like, he always plays like kind of somehow like a cool weirdo. Like, he's obviously a little strange, but he's cool somehow. Like, you want to hang out with him.
Right. He's always plays those weird stoner kind of guy that everybody knows. I have a friend in high school that was like that. I had a friend named Stormy. He was like, dude, bro, I went out with this one girl, man. You should have been there. And that's actually how he talks. Yeah. Like, no joke. But Seth has this vibe about him that's very realistic about him, even though he plays basically the same character in every movie. Yeah. All except 50-50, I would have to say that was actually his best movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I was even telling my wife this. I said, I like Seth Rogen, but I like him as a co-star versus him being the main star. Because it's just the perfect dose of bouncing off of somebody else into where we can actually, like,
no, I totally agree. I think I like him better as a co-star than the main star, because Knocked Up came out like 2 years after this movie, and I definitely prefer him in this movie rather than I did in Knocked Up.
Same.
And Knocked Up, I'm like, wow, I want to punt you.
Right, because he's such a douche in Knocked Up, to the point where it's like he's very irresponsible, he cares only about himself, he's egotistical, he's just an asshole. So, but with him, he's like, he wants to just hang out and chill with his bros. That's all he wants to do.
Yeah.
In this movie. And that's what I like about his character, was because we all have friends that we just want to hang with.
Yeah.
And it's very relatable, these characters are. Even when you were introduced to Paul Rudd's character, who's going through a bad breakup himself and things like that, and him smack talking with the manager, the store manager. Yamo, be there. One more, if I have to hear that song one more time, I'm going to Yamo burn this motherfucker down, place down to the ground.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't understand how Seth Rogen's character is like somehow higher on the social ladder than Andy is, you know? Because I guarantee you Seth Rogen's character lives in his mom's basement. Like that's how he lived and knocked up. He lived with like 10 other roommates. So it's like he gives those vibes that he does not have his life together. But Andy has his life together, you know? He has a job. Mm-hmm. He has a beautiful apartment in a nice apartment complex. Andy has hobbies. Like, right. I don't know. I was low-key crushing on Andy from the beginning.
My guess is that Seth Rogen's character is probably the tech store plug.
The what?
The tech store plug.
What does that mean?
He's their dealer.
Yeah.
And mover and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like any time the customer, because we've seen that when he's moving the TV out of the store and stuff too. But I think with Andy though too, he feels more awkward to talk to anybody at all too. Mm-hmm. So therefore he's like, look, I'm not a store manager. You can even see whenever somebody asks him a question about the videotapes and stuff like that. He's like, he does not want to be bothered. He does not want to answer anybody's questions. He's very awkward, standoffish. He just wants to go do his job and get the hell on out because he's not a people person. And I think that's why he hasn't moved up, is because everybody realizes, oh, he's a virgin. So therefore, we're going to make him talk to people to try and break him out of that entire element. So I'm also like that too, where I'm actually awkward around people that I work with and stuff like that too, and kind of standoffish to the point where I'm like, I just want to deliver my supplies and get out and do my job.
Do you deliver supplies?
I actually work at a hospital and nursing home so basically I supply the ER, hospital, and the nursing home side. So basically I just want to go in and speed through my cart, go back to my office, to the office, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Unless I know you, then I can carry on a conversation, but I'm just not going to go on ahead and just volunteer myself out. But I can actually relate to Andy in that kind of aspect of why he probably didn't move up to the chain. And while Seth is also and why him and Seth both work together, but I bet him and Andy don't really say that much, which is also the awkwardness between him when asking about, you know, well, how was your weekend? And then Seth is just bored because of the fact that, number one, he thinks he's a serial killer. Number two, he's even, you know, he's even bored with the conversation itself.
Yeah. Well, also, Andy is a supervisor. And so I feel like that might be one of the things to where they were like, no, he's probably kind of a snitch. Because when they invite him to the poker game, they were like, ah, man, I don't know. Because they immediately think he's going to snitch on them. So they might have just kind of excluded him because he was a manager.
That's a good point. Yeah, it does make sense that Andy wouldn't be. Because I was actually just going to ask, like, why was it that Andy wasn't part of the friend group? Because the other guys that work there have a little friend group going on. But if Andy's a manager, like, I don't want to hang out with my manager, respectfully. Mm-hmm. I don't have a manager, but I wouldn't want to hang out with them anyway.
Right, because it's just too awkward. And matter of fact, I actually know somebody that hung out with his boss. I'm like, no, thank you. I want to have my weekends to myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
See, I just went on vacation with my boss over the summer.
Okay.
Yeah, Courtney's a freak.
And then at my last job, like, I would literally, like, Snapchat my boss constantly. Like, we would Snapchat back and forth. She sent me like pictures of like her husband snoring, and she's like, I'm gonna smother him with a pillow.
Yeah, dude, can't relate. I have never been friends with a boss that, I mean, I've been friendly, but I just, yeah, can't relate. I've never been one to make friends at work either.
I have one good friend from my workplace, and I've also got a good boss though too, as well, that I'm friends with, but
it kind of sounds like you guys are being held hostage and you have to say this. Courtney and John are like, we love our bosses. They are amazing.
Oh, no.
Like
really...
AI is taking over us. It's like,
I really do. My boss doesn't listen to the podcast. She'll never know what I say. But it's like, I don't know. I love my boss. Like, I didn't have to go on vacation with her. But when I went to New Orleans on a girls trip and I Snapchatted her like the whole time and she didn't like watch them, I was like, why didn't you watch my Snapchats? I sent those to you and they've been unread, unwatched. These videos have been unwatched for a week.
That's rejection.
I know.
But with the here's the other thing though too, with the whole poker table thing though too, I thought this was really funny. So you have one friend that leaves the poker table that only leaves Andy, Cal, and Paul Rudd's character to come in there, mm-hmm. and they're talking back and forth, and he's like, and then you just have Paul Rudd who's actually talking about his broken heart about how, man, it was just love, it was just love, man, I fell in love with this one girl and she broke my heart. Man, why do you have to break the? Why do you have to ruin the vibe for? Why did you have to do that? And then Andy's just awkward, just sitting there, and you can definitely tell, even though he played like online poker and stuff like that, he's like, he's just in it. Yeah, man, you just need to get past that because no ass is worth.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't think Andy's ever had friends before.
No.
I mean, his neighbors, I guess, that he watches Survivor with, but like, I don't think that's different. I don't think he's had like peer friends, like a peer friend group before. And so yeah. Andy doesn't know what to do. Like, he's mimicking.
He is mimicking for sure. It seems like Andy is just always waiting for life to happen to him. And you could see how, like, because if he was actually antisocial, he would have never taken them up on the invitation to go. He would have made up an excuse. They wouldn't know. He could say he had plans. But he was actually eager to join them. So it's like, it's almost sadder to think that this man is 40 years old and he waited 40 years for someone to invite him to go somewhere with them. Like, isn't that just a little heartbreaking? Yeah.
That is sad if you think of it under that context, because I didn't think of it like that. I thought he was just shy and awkward, but because of the fact he accepted the invitation, everything is like, oh, wait, these guys are, I'm finally being accepted for who I am. But then I hope they don't discover that I'm a virgin either. But then again, he's not going there to think that they're going to be talking about sex or anything. He's just going there to have poker. He was going to have a Fanta, have himself a good time while everybody else is drinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just like the fact that he's the responsible one out of the group and, you know, and everybody's looking to him for guidance, but he doesn't have no guidance because he never slept with anybody or anything. Because, you know, it's just like, have you ever felt the woman's breast? Yeah, it felt like a bag of sand.
It's crazy that that's what gave him away, because as Andy's trying to describe fake sexual interactions that he's never had, he can kind of play it off because it sounds like he has some sort of concept of sex. He's probably watched a porn or a sex scene from a movie. But then when he has to give details that, you know, he sounds like an AI, you know, like if you asked AI, like, what do breasts feel like? The AI is going to be like, they feel like mounds of compacted sand. And then you're like, wait a minute, you're AI. You've never touched a boob, have you, ChatGPT?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking, like, what would a better way to describe that have been?
Yeah.
And my mind was just like, Like, I know it's not sand, but
I mean, is sand that far off? I'm, like, squeezing my arm and trying to figure out, like, sand is malleable. You know what I mean? Like, when you kind of squeeze, I guess I'm thinking wet sand. Never mind.
I mean, maybe like Play-Doh,
a bag of wet sand.
Or clay? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe.
See, we don't need to out ourselves here. And because right now there's three people and only two of us have boobs.
Yeah, I
and
can't see.
If we get very, watch us get very specific about what boobs actually feel like. And then everyone else is like, something's wrong with them. They have to go to the doctor. Like,
right, exactly.
Boobs feel really lumpy.
But you know what, though? I have to agree. I don't think that he's that far off, though, because even with my own experience and stuff like that, and and things like that. I'm thinking the same thing that Andy is thinking. So therefore, I would think, okay, there's no problem. But I think the miso horny thing would have actually gave him away. Mm-hmm. Because we did sexual stuff. She was getting down and dirty.
Yeah.
And I would think that would give him away more than the bag of sand.
That's true.
I feel like the bag of sand was sort of like a tiny little flame. And then the miso horny thing was like a Andy.
You've never seen a boob before, have you?
Have you ever talked to a woman? Have you ever met one?
Well, it's crazy too that Andy has to feel so ashamed about being a virgin, because like the other guys in this circle, by the way, they're way fucking creepier than he is. Like, they act like Andy is a serial killer for kind of being shy and awkward, but you have Paul Rudd's character who has been stalking a woman that he dated for like 3 months, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, he gives way more. Like, I feel like that guy has an altar in his house of just a random girl that he dated for a couple months.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a Lionel Richie. Hello, it's me again.
Yeah.
That would be David's character. I'm more than Andy, I think, because I can see that. I can see him being more the stockish kind of person as well, because Andy is just shy and awkward and just different from everybody and hard to be accepted because of it. You have Seth Rogen, who's a stoner, who's into screenwriting and doing different things. And then you have David, who is just totally off the rails and depressed and very stockish.
And Jay, who is cheating on his girlfriend.
Probably a sex addict, right?
Yeah. Like, first of all, don't take advice from Jay. Jay is the worst person in this group you can take advice from. Followed by Dave.
But did you notice how it seemed like Andy wanted to impress Jay most of all? Because if you rewatch the scene, he took on Jay's cadence when he's like, yeah, man, ain't no ass good enough to be, you know, upset about. Like, he tries to talk like Jay. He approaches Jay later and asks him, like, do you think I'm an attractive guy? Like, he seems to idolize Jay out of all of them, which I found interesting.
Because Jay gets the most pussy.
Yeah. Not only that, but I think he's the most masculine one, though, too. It's like he wants to be like him, because think of it like this. He's got the abs. He's got the muscles. He's got everything that a woman is looking for, according to how Andy's looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, clearly something's working for him. So if I have to be like this, then I'm going to go on ahead and mimic what I see, because that's who Jay is. So I'm going to mimic the most... I'm going to go ahead and mimic him because it's working for him.
That's a good point. Yeah, Jay is the womanizer of the group. So yeah, it does make sense.
Well, Jay also seems to be the ringleader of the group.
That's true. He is the one that kind of wrangles them together.
Mm-hmm. That's also true, because if you think about it, when you see David chasing Andy out of the tech place, and once they have a conversation, it's more of a down-to-earth friend relationship, and then you understand that David's going through something, and then Andy's trying to understand David and stuff like that too. He goes, man, don't listen to Jay. Jay don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So by himself, he's not being antagonized by anybody. He only has his own motives on trying to help Andy.
Yeah.
That was nice of him, by the way.
It was. But I feel like Dave's in no position to be giving anybody advice. Like,
he's the only one that seemed to genuinely care about Andy.
No, he is. But also, mentally, I feel like Dave was one bad day away from being like, just kidnap one.
Just kidnap a woman?
Just kidnap one. Right.
Yeah.
Just Grand Theft Auto her, you know?
Just yoink one off the streets.
Yeah.
And then, like, caveman her over the head.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
There you go. But you know, I definitely think that David has better intentions. I do. And everything, despite everything. And not only that, but I feel like that you can also learn from your friends, though, too, is, like, learn what not to do. As well. So Andy's like, well, this is what he's going through. And he's like, man, that sucks. Because even he says, yeah, love sucks. Love love is not happy or anything. Look at me, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
And stuff. So basically Andy's like, well, why would I want that if you're depressed? So he's learning something from him that he doesn't want, but also too, he's basically in the middle in a sense where he's like, he wants it, yeah, but he doesn't know how to respond to it.
Andy is so mortified when they find out that he's a virgin. He's so mortified. I feel like for that generation, which is probably what, like a really elder millennial, right? Like let's say the movie takes place right now, it would be an elder millennial, right? That's like 40.
Right.
Yeah. But like back in then, I think he was just Gen X.
Okay.
Solidly Gen X.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess for that generation, right? For like an elder millennial or Gen Xer, that's rare. It's really rare for someone to be a 40-year-old virgin. But I got to tell you, there have been studies that are showing that the younger generations are having like way less sex than the older generations have, just because people are generally more disconnected. Everything is virtual. And so now I'm starting to think, like, will this be more of a reality where like people are working remotely, people are hanging out remotely, they're hanging out in virtual spaces, and just 40 freaking years go by and they just never had sex?
That's a good point.
That's a scary possibility, to where you just become so like physically disconnected from society, because you don't have to leave your house. You can get like Instacart. You can DoorDash your groceries to your house.
Right. But then we're also getting to the point where pretty sure you're going to be able to order a girlfriend online, and you'll have to do zero self-reflection, zero growth, you know?
Or a sex robot that you can get delivered to your door.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
So are you a virgin if you've only had sex with a sex robot? I would argue yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be like having a sex doll, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But she can move. But she has no thoughts.
A sex doll is like the equivalent of like a dildo for a man.
Okay. A reverse dildo.
A reverse dildo, yeah. It's an innie.
But, okay. So let's go with the scene two. Jay attempts to quicken the process by tricking Andy into meeting a prostitute. When Andy discovers the hooker's a male transvestite, he insists that his friends stop trying to help him. Andy lands a date with Trish, a woman he met on a sales floor, who also works in her old store called We Sell Your Stuff on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also some other lead up, though, too, especially whenever Andy's trying to pick up the girl from the bar, and he ends up trying to talk to her, to this one woman, and Jay's like, okay, you got the right concept, but she's unconscious.
Talk to her.
And then he picks up the other actress that played in Big Daddy and Knocked Up.
Leslie Mann.
Yeah. And he goes, let's get some fucking French toast. That scene cracks me up every single time whenever I see it. And then she throws up on him. And it was just a bad situation altogether because he listened to Jay.
I commend Andy for not vomiting back on her.
Yeah, for sure. that was so gross.
Vomit, I don't do it. Like, my kid vomited the other day. I left the towels in the hallway for my husband to deal with when he got home. I was like, nope. He even said, did you have a daiquiri? Which means he tasted it. Mm-hmm. Oh,
I know.
Oh my God. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Disgusting.
I gagged in that. Oh God. And
that
why
scene was bad.
And in comedies, they always have to do the throwing up on the face. Like it feels like it violates the laws of physics for someone to like to like throw up onto your face. Like, they have to be doing it on purpose. It has to be on purpose.
Have you never thrown up while drunk before?
I have, yes.
Okay. Well, I can assure you that it does not. There is something supernatural about drunk throw up, and it always just goes straight.
It's just like propels forward.
It does.
It's like the Matrix. It just goes straight for the person that it wants to go for. That's it. Mm-hmm. There's no dodging it.
Oh my gosh. Leslie Mann she's fantastic though. Like her humor is some of my favorite because she doesn't rely on having funny lines. She just delivers every single mundane line that she has. She just delivers it with so much humor.
It's natural too. Natural humor,
Yeah,
so
natural
natural.
dialogue. Like you would actually pick up this girl at the bar and, and just have a conversation with her or bring you home. And especially when she does the breathalyzer test, because I remember those in the early 2000s. It's like, yeah, the judge told me to go ahead and get this breathalyzer test and everything. Here, you try. And of course, Andy's sober, so he's like, okay, whatever. He winds up doing the breathalyzer test. And
Oh.
it was just a rough night for Andy.
It was a rough night for Andy.
I'm sure Andy committed some sort of crime by
Yeah.
blowing into her breathalyzer to start her car.
Oh man. So
I
there
didn't think
must
about that.
be, yeah, there must be like a kind of a part two to this whole night because he just abandoned the scene of a of an accident, right? Because she just had an accident and then he got thrown up on. And then she's like, I can still have sex with you. And he's like, I'll pass.
I think I'll pass on the sex.
Yeah, if that's
Yeah.
okay. I feel like Andy is so sweet though that if she would have insisted, he would have like just been like okay, and he would have
Yeah.
done it with like vomit on his face.
I think so too. Just with, it's all good. I smell like shellfish. I can wipe this off in a few minutes and everything. I'll take a shower at your place. We're good. But also too, he also made a woman do DUI, driving under the influence, even though he's also rides a bike. So he's to blame for the accident because he's making this woman drive to her house that's intoxicated. But he has no clue because of what someone that's drunk is because of the fact he's never been faced in this situation.
So it's more than him being a virgin. It's like him. It's so okay. This is like so weird to me, right? Because on one hand, they could have had Andy living in his mom's basement and being like that kind of virgin of like failure to launch, right? But they didn't. They have Andy with a job. I mean, he's a supervisor. He has a job. He has an apartment. He has hobbies, which I think is really cool. He has tons of hobbies, whatever. And so he's somehow very multifaceted, but then also he doesn't have the maturity to say, hey, you're pissed drunk, you shouldn't drive. Just it's kind of a contradiction.
Yeah, and he wasn't always socially awkward because we see clips of the past where he had dated at one point. So
That's
I
true.
don't know,
That was a core
like
memory
that
when
was a
he
core memory. So like did he not to drink during that time or be around drunk people at that time, or was it just not something at the forefront of his mind, like, oh wait, we're getting in a car and she's fucked up? Like, was it
Right.
just not like, oh, hey, maybe she shouldn't drive? He was so nervous, like, oh, I'm going to go have sex with this girl right now. And he just forgot, oh, wait, she's drunk. She shouldn't drive.
I think that's what it was. I think it was the fact that, oh, this is finally happening. I'm finally going to score. And then the anticipation of it, and then it winds up failing. And then the next day, you have, of course, you have David, you have Cal breaking the whole entire lights, and stuff like that too. And he's like, well, like I told you, you would think that you would know this, Andy, not to, if she's drunk, to go ahead and drive her home. And he's like, well, I don't drive, I drive a bike. Well, who told you to ride a fucking bike?
Why does he ride a bike? Why doesn't he drive a car? Is it just like he just refuses to have any sort of discomfort, like anything that requires effort? He's like, no, thank you. But then he has a job.
But he's the stock supervisor. He's also adverse to sales. So far we have he's adverse to talking to women, relationships, sales,
Friendship.
social life, like relationships, not socializing, but initializing social interactions. So it's not that he's asocial. It's that he's like asocial curious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I also think it's the fact of you live in like Los Angeles and you don't really need a car to get around unless you live further out. Maybe mm-hmm. he lives not that far away from the store either. So maybe owning a car is not very efficient for him. And plus he lives alone and there's no chance of him probably getting a girlfriend probably. That's also what he's thinking too. But I don't know. That's actually an interesting question that I never questioned before because I'm like, you know, I was just thinking that's who the character is and the fact, too, that maybe the whole commute thing is not something he ever thought about doing was getting a car. And maybe he was afraid of driving, maybe.
It seems like it's probably fear connected. Like mm-hmm. Courtney said, he's afraid to move up in the job. He's afraid to deal with the people in the sales floor. He's afraid of women. He respects women so much that he leaves them alone.
Yeah, that's my favorite line.
It's not that he avoids driving. He doesn't know how to drive because he later gets taught how to drive.
Right.
Yeah. He avoided learning. Yeah.
And then, but did you think about the whole transvestite thing? As far as that scene goes?
I mean, it's an early 2000s movie, so mm-hmm. we have a lot of things that would not be put in a movie now. And it's wild, right? Because mm-hmm. the things that were laughed at and the humor that really hit in the early 2000s is a big no-no now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they say the R word.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it's... That was very early 2000s to where it was just, you just said it. It was a commonplace thing, you know? But.
And. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, and with the transvestite thing, while they were kind of respectful in the way they addressed the sex worker, mm-hmm. they still used her as a punchline, you know, which is kind of like, come on, like, you know, first of all, I'm calling it a plot hole because I feel like the escort service that you're ordering this escort from would confirm whether or not you wanted.
I think Jay did that on purpose, though, too. It's I'm going to get him laid no matter what. And I don't care if it's a man or a woman or anything like that. And it happens to be a woman in drag. It was a transist. I think it was the fact that I'm going to get Andy laid and I don't care if I have to make fun of him to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, Jay was like, you know, if that was a transvestite, like, that's the, you know, hottest one I've ever seen. And it's like, okay, can you confirm how many you've seen? Like, she was attractive. She was very attractive. But can you confirm how many you've seen? Because if you're just like, that's the only one.
Yeah.
So of course she is.
Right.
Probably, yeah.
But like Rose said, if it was a escort service, they would have been like, hey, just to confirm, what kind of equipment are you looking for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to make sure things are compatible. Because they'd probably get a lot of complaints and very few return customers.
Yeah.
If they thought they were ordering V and got P, you know, that's a big difference. Those are not interchangeable things.
No, it's not. And you would actually think that when you order a prostitute or something like that, too, you would actually like, look, do you want a person with a P or a V? Because we want to match what you want sexually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was just Jay just being a bully and trying to get Andy laid. That's my thing. Because I know guys like this in college at the early 2000s, even with the conversation, the banter between Cal and David sitting down playing Mortal Kombat and stuff like that, too. It's like, well, you know how I know you're gay? Well, you know how you... And it's like the back and forth of that conversation where, that's early 2000s mentality of two guys hanging out. And I remember my friends and I doing it, but now I realize that's not something that I would do now. Reflecting back on my past, and this is, but you know, and then I was like, this is actually how early 20s in our college years would talk.
Yeah. It was in a Taylor Swift song, okay? And Taylor Swift is like the most like curated and careful celebrity in the world. And she had a lyric I'll tell my friends you're gay. So like, hey, if you can forgive her, you can forgive other millennials for using that.
It's funny because now that scene, it's just like, if you want to kiss boys, kiss boys.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, just say that. It doesn't need to be a big deal.
Right.
Like, being gay isn't shocking anymore. Okay.
No. Right.
Like, going home and telling your parents you're gay, they're like, all right, but I don't, what do you want me to do about that? Like, what? Do you need me to set you up like a Grindr profile? Like, what do you want me to do?
It shouldn't be. Yeah, it shouldn't be shocking. I think I think there are parts of the U.S. still that, you know, people are afraid to come out.
I feel like just being gay in general isn't like a shocking, shameful thing for the majority of people anymore. And like now when we're watching early 2000s movies and they're like, they're using it as an insult like that. Like it's supposed to be like this shocking, like, ooh.
Or it's wrong to be gay.
And I'm like, don't call me gay. Call me a Republican. Okay. If you want to hurt me, that's how you're going to do it. All right. Like, don't insult my sexuality. Like, insult my morality here. We've evolved in our insults, you know, as we've aged. And it shows.
Yeah.
We can make it a little creative.
Yeah, be creative. Call them like a thunder cunt, not a retard. Like, you know, be creative. You're smarter than that.
But what did you guys think of the whole dating thing, though, too? This speed dating round that they did with Andy and all them. He's like, and then, you know, I even heard, this is my first time hearing Seth Rogen go, that girl vagina, she seemed pretty hot. I'm like, wait, I didn't even notice that, like, when I was first watching it. I'm like, wait, I gotta rewind that back, because I never heard that line at all from watching it. And then you have Andy basically just doing the whole speed dating thing. And he goes, so, I like to actually take you over and bend you over and everything and put a little strap on you. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
I love that. Is it David who is obsessed with his ex?
Yeah, David. Mm-hmm.
I love how David's ex is Mindy Kaling. I love Mindy Kaling. So I was like really excited to see her.
Same. She is adorable. I read both her books. They are amazing. But I love how we get her perspective here, where like Seth's character is like, hey, you need to leave my friend alone. You need to quit leading him on. And she's like, I moved. I changed my number. I've been ignoring him. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Like, do you want me to leave LA? Do you want me to leave California? Like, that's the best I can do now. I can change my name. And it just shows that, like, oh, wow. Like, Dave's ex hasn't just been kind of dragging him along or like giving him mixed signals. She gave it a hard stop, and Dave's just obsessed
with her.
Yeah.
And yeah, even when Cal says, look, you need to leave my friend alone, you bitch, and stuff like that, you know, and he goes, look, I'm tired of you. All he's been doing is being depressed at work and everything. I'm sick of it. He goes, he's the one who's been emailing me and stalking me and doing all this other off-the-wall shit, and you're going to be the one who comes up to me and says this? He goes, well, I didn't know.
No. Yeah. Seth is like, I have not been given all the information. I am sorry. Mm-hmm.
At least he apologizes. But
yeah, that's true.
But I like how he went up to bat for his friend, defending his honor, and then all of a sudden he's like, you know what? My friend is pretty shitty for this.
Immediately backs off. Like, actually, I didn't realize he was a stalker. I still support him.
Yes.
But I take back what I said.
You know, girls would never, like, if that was, like, situation was reversed, and they were like, well, Rose is the one stalking me, doing this, and I would have been like, I don't care. That's not what I said.
What were you wearing? It sounds like you deserve to be stalked, sir.
Like, did you tell her to stop? Did you say no?
Did you explicitly say, I want her to stop stalking me? Because if you didn't...
Did you keep posting to your public social media? Because that's like you're asking for it.
You watched her story once. So now you guys are getting married.
Yeah, like that's where girls differ, because girls would be like, I support her no matter what. And you're so wrong.
Yeah.
And then privately we'd be like, hey girl,
girly pop,
I think maybe you might be in the wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm surprised they all did it with him. I thought they were just dropping him off at speed dating. I didn't realize they were all doing it.
Right. That's something that I forgot about, to be honest with you. I thought that it was just Andy by himself, or it was actually Cal, because Cal's single. He would be the only one to go with him. And so, well, also David, too. The only one that's not single is Jay. And Jay is just so into himself that thinks that he can actually get anybody he wants. And then you have Andy that has to cover for him at the tech shop, especially when his wife comes in and goes, look, man, look. She's coming up to me. She's a hoe for show. And
he's such a dirtbag. He's such a, like,
you need to get your bitch on a leash.
Jay is such a dirtbag for putting Andy in that position, but he came in clutch. Andy came in clutch and started defending Jay, but not just defending Jay, but attacking his wife, which took some balls, okay, for a man to speak to a woman like that.
Especially a woman he doesn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In front of her husband.
That's the most unbelievable part of the whole movie, is that Jay's wife didn't just, like, slap the dog shit out of Andy right in the middle of that tech store. Because you could see it. She, like, she wanted to slap
the dog. She wanted to, yes.
Like, she was acting. She was in character. And she still wanted to slap the dog shit out of Steve Carell. just for the audacity to say it. And I'm like, no, that's the most unbelievable 40-year-old virgin. 40-year-old virgin, fine. I can get behind it. Mm-hmm. That scene, no.
No.
That was
just wrong.
That's where I'm like, that never would have happened. She would have slapped the dog shit out of him.
Yeah. She would have slapped the dog shit out of him, because I already know women that won't back down from someone like that either, especially with someone that they don't know. Is like, look, I don't know this guy from Adam, so therefore I'm going to go in and slap the shit out of him because I don't know him. He goes, is this your friend? He goes, man, I hung out with him a couple of times and everything. I took him out for some drinks and stuff like that. I had no idea he was like this. I'm sorry, baby. But he made him be the wingman without even knowing who his wife is. And then on top of that, also, too, he ends up putting Dan, like you said, he puts Andy in a bad position. So now he has to try and defend Jay, even though Jay really did cheat on his wife.
Yeah.
Are they married or is that his girlfriend?
I think they're married.
They're married. I feel like Jay being married is kind of the biggest tragedy in this whole movie, because she ends up, you know, his wife ends up pregnant. And I'm like, this woman has no idea the horrible, horrible man that she's married to. He is, like, cheating on her the whole entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then, you know, after all that happens, and then, of course, they also put him basically just doing the whole wax thing as well. They put him through that. And he just looked like a man-o-lantern. That's what Dave says to him. But then you also get, now let's talk about this. So Trish and him are now going to go out. Trish, I love the chemistry between him and Trish. I think Trish and him are beautiful together. And I like how now he's discovering, oh, she's a grandmother and she has a kids of her own and things like that. And there's more to her. And Andy goes, I like the fact that you're a grandmother and stuff like that. I think that's sweet. And then he feels like he can play it safe, because now he doesn't have to worry about having sex with her, because they just basically made an agreement not to have sex for like 10 days.
Mm-hmm. It's 20 dates. Yeah, because she starts with 10 and then he's like, fine, 10. And she's like, 15. He's like, fuck it, 15. 20, make it 20. And he's just like, yes.
It's not even 20 days, it's 20 dates. Like at first I thought like, oh, 20 days. So yeah, that's a reasonable 20 dates. So that could be over the period of 3 months, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And but I feel like they get really intertwined super fast.
They do,
he's
yeah.
just like walking, they're giving each other presents. He's just walking into her house. Like he's helping with her daughter. Like it's, they get super entwined in each other's lives super fast.
It's all about that attachment, you know, of being in love with somebody and having that chemistry with somebody. And I definitely like the chemistry with the daughter and everything, especially when the little girl, he goes, well, I got this. And he takes the big quarter, takes it behind her ear. Oh, you mean to tell me you actually carry a rubber ear with you? Yeah, I do. But, you know, I liked how he's able to play off the little girl. Then also, too, he's also sold on the old. Now the oldest one mm-hmm. likes him, too. And it's like, okay, I feel safe with my mom. And then she has that whole entire thing experience with her boyfriend because her boyfriend thinks that Andy and her mom slept together. And he's like, dude, yeah. you got to teach me. And he's all he did was play with condom packs and call himself Aquaman.
I was like, what was he doing even? Like, at a certain point, he completely forgot what the assignment was, and he just started blowing up balloons and putting condoms on his, you know, forearm. I'm like, all right, dude.
He had a condom all the way up his calf.
Yeah.
And that, it's, like, I thought it was, like, a rite of passage as, like, a preteen, early teen. Like, oh, you figure it out, you know, like, maybe it's just me.
Like,
maybe,
learn how to,
I don't, you learn, like, how to use a condom. Like, that's, I thought it was just, like, a rite of passage. Like, you figure it out. Like, you watch, like, YouTube was a thing in 2005. Watch a YouTube video, my dude. Why are you struggling? Like, it's, you've never opened one before? You're 40.
Yeah.
Even in health class, my health teacher was like, you know what, girls? If the guy says that the condom does not go all the way up, guess what? And she pulls it all the way up to her arm.
Yeah.
Because, you see, it fits like a glove. I'm like,
they're stretchy.
Yeah. So, but I also want to know, how long was Trish in that bathroom to where Andy was playing with all those condoms, too? Like, what is she doing?
Yeah. You lived in a progressive state where they were teaching how to use condoms. They don't teach that in Kentucky. Kentucky's an abstinence-only state.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember if they taught us that. I don't remember them teaching us that in Virginia. But can we talk about Trish for a minute? Because... Mm-hmm. The first time I watched this movie, I thought she's like the sweet lady, you know, she's kind of has her hands full. She has a business. She has kids. And then watching it again, I'm just like, something is off about her. Like, I feel like I want a little more backstory about Trish because she seems a little unhinged, like just a little bit. The fact that she brings this man home that she doesn't know and is ready to have sex with him. Like, when you're a parent, you know where your kids are at all times. You know when your kids are going to be home and when they're not going to be home. So it's like her knowing that her full teenage kids are going to just walk through the door at any moment and she leaves her bedroom door unlocked. I was like,
yeah,
that's weird. And then throughout their dating, she's, you know, making out with him and stuff on the couch with all the lights off where her kids, her six-year-old walks in. Do you know? So I'm just kind of like, Trish, what's going on, babes? Like, what's happening? And then she does other crazy stuff later on in the movie that I'll get into.
I like Trish, but I do agree that something's off. It's giving mania.
She does give mania. She does seem like she's in a manic episode. Wouldn't it be funny if she literally just started that business? Like, she has that business across the street from where Andy works. It would be hilarious if she just thought that up, like, last full moon. She was just like, I'm starting a business, and, like, rented a space.
That's probably what she did, because, look, there's nothing inside that store at all. And she goes, take a look around, Andy, see if there's anything that you like. Okay. It just takes a look around. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I think I'm going to start a business. Let me go and look at the Yellow Pages, for example, and see if what's available. Oh, okay, there's a store. There's a tech store that's actually perfect for me. I can pick up whatever electronic stuff I need for my for my stuff, and then I can go ahead and go back to my empty store.
Impulsive.
Yeah.
It's impulsive.
Yeah. It's, don't worry, girly. It'll fade.
Yeah, yeah. And then you'll be like, oh, fuck. I signed a lease. I'm stuck with this.
It'll go down, and then it'll stay down.
Then you'll be depressed like the rest of us.
But do we ever get any backstory on her ex-husband?
No. We just know that he was out of the kids' lives, and that's it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
For me, though, I thought that worked. You know, and I know that Rose wants to... I'll let Rose talk in a minute, too, because I just felt like that worked for me, because if he was just a sperm donor that just basically, you know, left during the time that she was pregnant, it's like, okay, peace out, I'm done. That works, because of the fact it's like, okay, now I'm a single mother, I'm having to raise two daughters on my own and try to figure this shit out on my own. So that works. I think if you add that, I'm just saying this, I'm not saying that you guys are saying this, but I feel like if you add like the husband element into it, then you have a villain that you have to, that Andy has to actually go after. And everything too, where now Seth Rogen's character has to have beef with him, Jay has to have beef with him. It's just too much stuff going on. But just it just being a single mother, I think it actually works. And I think that part works for me. But
I agree with you. I don't think we needed the ex-husband in the picture or anything like that. But I'm just so curious, like, why does she give really manic vibes, like something, something's not right with Trish. I think he needs to check her basement and her freezer. She's hiding something.
I asked about the ex-husband because I was just like, I wonder if that has anything to do with sort of her demeanor. So I didn't know if we had gotten any information about that. I just forgot.
No, that's pretty much it. It's just like, there was no husband around or anything like that. It's like, he's just like a sperm donor. I'm out and that's it. Now good luck to you. That's the way I seen it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, and then you also had the other thing too, where Andy actually calls her up and he ends up saying, hey, are you interested in buying the next Reader Digest? And then she comes unhinged. I agree with Rose on this. She's way unhinged. Andy just asks her, like, he didn't mean to prank call her, but I understand that telemarketers can be aggravating, but aggravating to the point where you just become unglued, Elvis. I'm going to put my foot up your ass, you fucking asshole. I'm not interested in this motherfucker. Yeah, this, like,
she tells him to go kill himself. Yeah. She's like, find a roof, jump off of it, run into a knife. Like,
that was a lot. I actually forgot about that when I was saying she was unhinged, but that, giving someone graphic details of how to, like, I don't know. And you have to imagine, like, this is who she really is, because she's talking to a stranger that pissed her off. Like, she's not trying to impress this person. But also, bitch, you don't have caller ID. Like, 2005. You don't have caller ID. Because he calls her. Andy calls her multiple times.
Right. And then he's even nervous again. He goes, this is Andy from the store. he's also afraid of her reaction of who he is now.
Like, yeah,
well, this didn't work the first time, let me see what happens now, you know.
Yeah
Mello says she probably has a lot of road rage.
Oh my gosh, we never see her driving. We don't see her driving. She does drive because she picks them up and stuff.
But I think with the personality that she has, she would probably have a lot of road rage if they showed any kind of, you know.
Sure.
We see a little clip of her teaching Andy how to drive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. You know what's interesting? I feel like when people that have road rage and kind of what she does when she snaps at who she thinks is the telemarketer and tells, you know, him to, like, go kill himself, I feel like those people are they're kind of scary because they'll have these, like, explosive angry episodes and then they just, like, go back to normal. And it's almost like they don't think anything weird happened. It's like they were possessed. Like, one second they're driving and they're just like, go crazy, and then they're like back to normal. Like, I've seen people do that.
Do you not like, have road rage?
Do you get mad at people on the road? But I think road rage, to me, it means like blind, like you're like blinded by anger. So,
like going up to that extra mile of like, you guys need to die and run.
Exactly.
Hell,
yeah.
That kind of level. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's a difference between having road rage and being angry. Now, being angry is just someone cutting you up and you saying, you mother effer, you motherfucker, you cutting off. And everything, and then you let it go after 5 minutes of complaining about it, and that's it. Road rage is where you take it over the limit for an hour.
No, for sure,
Yeah, okay. No, I get it, because I'm just like, wait a minute, like, I have road rage, am I unhinged? But, no, like, people will cut me off, and I'll just be like, fuck your mom, bitch! But then I'm back to normal. Mm-hmm. Just like, okay, it's over now.
That's normal, yeah. You didn't, like, follow them home.
No.
Seduced their dad, married their dad, became their stepmom.
No, I have a consent
them to their room.
Car. I can't do that.
Let's see. Mello says, to be honest, I have some road rage, but not enough to approach a person and easily, especially would never threaten them.
Same here. Probably an introvert, right, Mello? You're probably an introvert. Introverts are very complicated. We'd be like, I'm going to keep this to myself because I don't want to talk to people.
I feel like oftentimes we feel like our car is like a fortress. Mm. Like, I sometimes forget that the car has windows.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where it's like, I feel safe in the car. So like when I'm screaming at someone or flipping someone off, I feel super safe, but then like we end up next to each other at like a stoplight and I'm just like straight ahead because they can see me.
Yeah.
But then we also have this other thing now. Finally, we're actually reaching the 20th date, but we also deal with the fact that the daughter is now going to basically sex ed and stuff now. And Andy is over there with her. He goes, and they're making fun of her inside the class. It's like, hey, look, I'm a virgin. And they're like, and then Andy's like, well, I'm a virgin too. And I like how the daughter looks at her and goes, Kate Dennings. I love Kate Dennings. Kate Dennings is my favorite actress, to be honest with you. But I like how she goes, look, you didn't have to say all this shit just to make me feel better. He goes, no, I'm really a virgin. It's like he went to therapy himself that day. It's like, look, I'm having this issue too, so I want to learn too. And I like how he's basically taking like side notes. He's like, oh, what else can you do? Well, you can masturbate. Yeah, you can play with yourself. Dry hump. Yeah, dry humping. That sounds good. So
it's true. If you don't use it, you lose it.
You lose it. What did he think his penis was going to fall off? Like the first time he had sex because he's never used it?
Well, it's so funny because his friends keep saying, you have so much semen backup. Like, he might actually think, wait a minute, like, is it rotting? Like, is it going is it like going moldy in there? Is it going to fall off?
I think he's also wondering too, with life that he has now, he's 40 years old, am I ever gonna lose it? And what happens if I do find the right person? Am I not gonna have kids? It's like all the what ifs and the anxiety of the what ifs.
I didn't think about the kids part. The fact that he's never expressed interest that we saw and or even regret. Like, actually, in the beginning of the movie, Andy was completely fine with being a virgin, it seemed like. It seemed like he was completely settled in his situation. But that scene of them at the sex clinic or birth control clinic, I felt like it was a little character growth moment because for Andy to volunteer the information that he is a virgin after hearing everyone laugh at the girl when she said she was, I felt like that was character growth because you saw in the beginning how mortified he was when his friends found out. So it's like being laughed at and admitting that was like a really big deal to him. He couldn't even tell his girlfriend.
Yeah. I feel like Trish is good for Andy's like growth as a person.
She is. Yeah. She's pushing him, right? But then also, again, Trish might be a little manic. She's kind of pushing mm-hmm. him more than he wants to be pushed. If you're dating a guy who is a supervisor at, you know, like what does he do? A store?
It's like Best Buy, but it's smart okay. tech.
Right, yeah. right. But he's like a stocking manager or whatever he is. That is what he does for a living. He seems content with it. He's not expressing to you that he wants another position. Why are you projecting what you want onto him? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know. It's because she's probably a fixer.
She would have fixed his virginity problem real quick.
Yeah, all he had to do was say the word.
Right, and that's it. But yeah. Let's see here. Mello says, I'm going to go through some of the things he said. He goes, at times I'll huff and puff and speed up and go around the car. that's about the road rage thing that we were talking about. And then he also says that was a really endearing scene because he seemed to generally, seems curious and friendly despite the subject matter. And he also agreed with Rose, and he goes, I am also an introvert, extrovert, mostly introvert. So, but yeah. I do have to say that I think that Trish is the type of woman that would actually tie Andy down and fuck his brains out if she said, I'm a virgin.
She would have fixed
the problem right then and there. We didn't need 2 hours of of him going through all this, you know, but
yeah.
He's still reserved in himself. He can't come clean with it. And then whenever on the 25th date, he's trying to be a man, trying to sell his stuff. And she basically forces him, and which causes the whole entire argument. And he goes, I don't want to sell my action figures. I like my action figures. I like what I'm doing. Even when David winds up saying, look, you're like an action figure. You're stuffed up in these boxes and you need to get out. You need to play with it. But she just pushed him to the limit to where he finally snaps at her. Yeah. And then that causes the accident. Then, of course, she winds up getting to that. He chases her down with his bike. And then she winds up going through that whole entire 18-wheel and stuff like that, too. But, yeah.
I feel like I was surprised. I was surprised when he agreed to sell his stuff, but he's just so passive. It almost makes me wonder, because obviously in the end, they end up together, but it's like, it makes me wonder how miserable he's going to be in marriage, because this man has spent the last 40 years doing his beautiful morning routine that he's not going to be able to do now that he is a dad of two. Okay, I'm sorry, when you have kids, you don't get to take a bubble bath in the morning. You don't get to, you know, make yourself this beautiful breakfast and work out for an hour. That none of that happens. So I'm just curious what his life is going to be like.
I'm actually really proud of him. Like, I don't love the way he stood up to Trish, but I do like that he did it, because I feel like the Andy at the beginning of the movie wouldn't have done that.
That's true. Yeah.
He would have just went with it.
Yeah, he would have just went with it. He would have just allowed all this stuff to be sold. So I am actually really proud of him for standing up to her, even though I wish he would have done it differently, just because, like, that was very emotional and there are better ways to do it. So I wish that he would have done it differently, but I'm really proud that he did. He was just like, no, I don't want to sell my action figures. You wanted to sell my action figures. Like, but taking these home with me.
Yeah. Good for him.
He
did sell them. He did sell them in the end, didn't he?
No, I think so, yeah.
I don't know. I thought he still had it wrapped up and everything, too. Like, they were on the verge of actually selling them on eBay, and then they got into that fight. And then after that happens, he goes straight to the nightclub, and he winds up finding that one girl they was hitting on that Cal was trying to hook him up with. And mm-hmm. Yeah, because remember, he goes, just say whatever the woman wants you to say. And so he winds up, so you got a car? You know, I have a bike and I can put it in your trunk.
He walked so that Cardi B could run with her Big Mac truck and her little garage line.
Yeah.
And then at that point, they all go into the apartment, and it turns out Jay slept with her and Cal slept with her. Mm-hmm. And she's also going downstairs with the handle. And then, you know, it's like, and he's like, look, I gotta go. She's way too psycho for me.
What was she doing that was so psycho, though? I don't understand how they painted this woman like she was just like this deranged nymphomaniac. Like, she was a woman who had flirted with a guy. They agreed to go back to her place, and she was in the bath. Like, I don't, and was like, hey, I'm warming myself up. Like, what was so, like, they're all virgins. Like, I'm not convinced any of them have ever had sex, because they were so like, oh my God, what? There's a naked woman that wants sex? Sounds like a whore to me, you know? Like, they were just so...
Well, except Cal, because Cal's like, well, everybody else is gone, so I'm just going to go ahead and go for it.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that she could just interchange individuals at a moment's notice is a little sus.
I think my husband referred to this as homie hopping. Where you just switch from one friend of the friend group to the other friend of, like, the other dude from the friend group. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, it's, we support women's rights and women's wrongs.
Yeah, I stand behind all the crazy women in this movie, including Trish. It's fucking crazy as she is.
Right.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Trish, she broke into his, like, I wanted to say this because this is the other crazy thing that she did. Like, Andy gets home and she's in his house after he escapes from the crazy nymphomaniac. Mm-hmm. Trish is in his house looking through his shit. Like, I'm sorry, not cool. Actual misdemeanor, I think. Isn't that a misdemeanor?
Breaking, I would think, it was like a B&E type of thing.
Yeah.
Because he even has the vagina model that she goes, what's this? Woman, you need to put that down. That you're going through his stuff, even though it is creepy to her because of that. Let the guy explain, because you're in his house, and you also need to explain to him why you're in her and why you're even in his house too.
Yeah,
you guys both have explaining to do. You guys have some stuff that you guys need to air out.
So he stole the vagina model from the sex ed clinic. It's not like it's the worst thing,
right?
Yeah. Who hasn't? Am I right? Who among us hasn't stolen a vagina model from a sex ed clinic?
I mean, honestly, we all steal things from the doctor's office. Is the vagina model really different than a handful of latex gloves?
Courtney.
But I need to do a poll for that.
Yeah. Courtney's always confessing to crimes on the podcast, but usually I edit them out. So,
do you guys not steal gloves from the doctor's office?
No, Courtney. Jesus Christ, you're going to jail.
I work at the hospital, so and I also supply them, so I can just take the box.
Are you a mandated reporter? Can you report her?
I don't know anything about no gloves missing. I don't know anything that she's doing.
Okay. I'm not weird here, okay? Most people steal gloves from the doctor's office.
Okay. Well, we'll do a poll. Marshmallow?
Let's see. Marshmallow says, I want some French toast. That fucker came out of nowhere.
The Mellow Mutant Show says, I've taken gloves.
Oh, so.
See, I'm not the weirdo.
No gloves.
I love it. You see, this is what I love about doing a podcast. We're all admitting to stuff that we've done. So
is this just blackmail material? Just file this under.
You don't need to save it for blackmail. I'll say it on my own page. I'll put it out there myself. It's not a crime.
She'll tag the sheriff.
It's not illegal until you get caught, right?
I don't think my doctor's office cares that I steal gloves.
It's all good. But
I'll tell Kathy myself.
Yeah.
But how do you guys feel about, like, the ending of this and how it wraps up?
What did you think, Courtney?
I wasn't mad at it. I don't know. I think while I like Trish and... while I like Trish and Andy together, I think I might have kind of liked for Andy to find somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm a little suspicious of Trish as much as I support women's rights and women's wrongs. But what I'm curious about, too, is the fact that it seems like they waited until after marriage to have sex. And I guarantee you this was Trish's idea, because at no point did Andy ever say that he was waiting until marriage. So I guarantee you it was her idea.
Right, because if you think about it, you know, even when his college years, he was bringing girls home, and he ended up, when the girl sucked on his toe, he broke her nose. And then you also have those scenes that play out. He was not waiting. He was raring to go. And even when he was hitting on the chick at the bookstore and everything else, he was ready. He wanted it. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think with Trish, she's like, look, you only be a virgin once. I wanted to be special for you. So therefore, let's get married.
Yeah.
What if she used that to force him to marry her? Kind of like Anne Boleyn did with King Henry VIII. She she seduced him, but she wouldn't sleep with him unless he married her. And so he literally abandoned the religion of the country to marry her and have sex. Trish. What if she was just holding it over his head?
I think that may actually be, you may be onto something there. She may be like, listen, I'm tired of being this single mom, okay? Mm-hmm. Having a co-parent would actually be fucking amazing. So here's the thing. I'm going to weaponize that pussy. Mm-hmm. If you want the punani, we got to get married. At that point, honestly, do you think Andy's going to be like, I'd like a divorce? No.
Right.
No.
She could literally run him over with her car, and I don't think he would ask for a divorce.
It's kind of like that scene in Night of the Roxbury where the two brothers finally get laid from those, I don't know if you ever seen that movie or not. But
I've never seen that one.
Okay, so basically you have Steve and Doug Bitami, and it's Will Ferrell in this movie too. And they're virgins. They're adult men who are virgins. They wind up meeting these other two girls at the club, right? And so now, all of a sudden, they just got laid. It's like, dude, did you? Yeah. And look, I'm just gonna go check on her. I'll be right back. And then they go back in the rooms and everything, and they're nailing them again. And it's kind of like that same aspect of the fact is, you mean to tell me if I divorce this woman, it's kind of like the same thing. I'm never gonna get laid again, so I might as well stick with her because she's my only person that I can be with. Because of the fact that I lost my virginity to, because that's all I know. Just as how Steve and Doug feel about those two girls that they picked up. It's like, these are the only two girls that I ever slept with. So therefore, you know, I'm obsessed with this person now. So therefore, I'm going to stick with what I know versus what I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Especially because of everything Andy had to go through to even have sex for the first time.
Yeah.
And so he's just like, this is it. I'm stuck here. But then did you hear, it was, what was the guy's name? The guy that cheated on his wife all the time.
Jay.
Yeah.
Jay and his wife were sitting in the audience during the wedding. And the wife said, how could they afford this wedding? And Jay says he sold all of his figurines for $100,000. Oh, yeah. So Andy did sell all his stuff. So I love when movies have kind of a different, almost like if it had a different soundtrack, it would be a different movie. Imagine this movie as a psychological thriller and Trish is the bad guy.
Ooh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
it's kind of like turning Mrs. Doubtfire into a horror movie.
Yeah, because she said, he said to her, I don't want to sell my stuff and you're making me sell it. And then in the end, he's marrying her and he sold his stuff anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
She won.
It's like the second half of Gone Girl at the end.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of also like this, though, too, though, if you think about it, and we'll wrap up in a minute, but it's kind of like this, right? It's like I gave, saying to your boys, well, I finally got laid, but what did it cost you? It cost you your action figures, your freedom, you're not going to be able to get up early in the morning anymore and do your routine. Yeah. Forget about doing that 3-hour lunch thing now. You can't do that no more. So what did you, you got it, but what did you give up in the end?
Yeah.
You could have just got a Tinder.
The Mellow Mutant show, says, oh, I missed that rose for the ending of him selling his stuff after all, kind of sad in that aspect. it was, you know, just kind of this little throwaway line they added in the end, but it was interesting that they did that mm-hmm. because it was almost like they wanted to highlight really quickly, mm-hmm. like, hey, by the way, Trish got her way.
But also, too, it's also about the man sacrificing from being a boy to being a man and giving up childish mm-hmm. things as
yeah,
well.
I don't agree with that, though, because it's like, who says a man can't have a collection of figurines? Do you know what I mean? What is... So, I mean, you go. Like, what is so fucking... Like, dude, I love when men have hobbies. Listen, men that have hobbies are not shooting up schools, okay? Men that mm-hmm. have hobbies are not out here snatching women from the road and murdering them, okay? Let's encourage men to have fucking hobbies. And let's stop pretending, or let's stop spreading this idea that having these hobbies is, like, somehow a bad thing. We want men to have hobbies, because when they don't, they do bad things.
I mean, how is collecting action figures, like, different than video games, to be honest? Like, he does, like, he paints them and stuff like that. How is that different than video games?
Yeah.
Like, I think I would rather have a husband that paints little action figures under a magnifying glass and collects action figures than a man who plays video games.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But I mean, even so, I think they're so adorable. The little action figures, they're so adorable. I'd
they
be
are.
So proud of him. I'd be like, look, baby, I put your, all your action figures on the wall in the basement in a room where nobody goes. But look, it's here.
Where Dr. Dre is locked up. But, <yeah.
laughs> I don't know. Frank doesn't yeah. have either yeah. of those. He doesn't play video games or have tiny action figures. He has bees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I miss. So I said, yeah. The Mellow Mutant Show says hobbies save themselves and others.
Yeah. So they said Mellow Mutant or just Mellow is fine.
Oh, sorry.
That's cool.
You're saying the whole thing. I just apologized for it and then I did it again.
But you know what, though? I actually play video games. I collect comic books. I do all that same nerdy stuff that Andy does. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that, too. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy to have mm-hmm. a hobby away from your spouse and stuff like that too, so the way it gives you a chance to actually just breathe a little bit. I think that's also too what Andy needs though too, now that he's married. He just needs that time and space and everything too. But yeah. You know, and then he's excited because now he's finally got getting ready to get some inside the hotel room. He tells the little guy that's buffing the floor, he goes, get out.
What's the most aggressive he's been?
Yeah.
Since he was yelling at Jay's wife.
Right. But still, okay. So now that we've gotten away from the nostalgia, now that we broke away from all that, what do you rate this now?
I don't know. If we usually don't rate movies.
Okay.
So okay. We usually don't rate movies, but you say six, Courtney?
Six. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't... Here's the thing with me, like for older films like this, I do about a 10. Like I like stripping away the nostalgia, looking at the lenses of an adult because of the fact that I was actually 20 years old when I seen this, 19. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking differently. I was laughing at different scenes and not thinking the way that I am as an adult. Yeah. So that's why I love doing the stripping away the nostalgia kind of feel to it. And that's why I do nostalgic to make me feel like I'm 20 again, but but I'm 39. But... You know, I did, but for newer films, I don't really rate them. I'll do maybe out of 5 for like Letterboxd, and that's about it.
That's the thing, too. Like when you say out of 10, I'm like, man, that's like it's quite the spectrum to rate on. Like, where am I out of 10? Because if I don't know, I'm like, I would probably say 6 as well. I think it's enjoyable. There are obviously parts that didn't age well, as a lot of early 2000s movies didn't, but I enjoyed it.
It's funny and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of things that are kind of fun but not really that funny, and things that are fun, like things that are funny but not really like a fun movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was both. I don't know her name, but the girl that plays her older daughter.
Yeah, Kate Dennings.
Yeah, yeah. She's on Two Broke Girls. And I really like her. And I forgot she was in this. And so I really kind of enjoyed seeing her, like, in her earlier films. But I don't know. It's hard for me to strip the nostalgia all the way away.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do. And here's the thing with me. Like, I felt like the runtime was a lot longer watching it, mm-hmm. too. And that's also one of the things that Robert Ebert said was that the runtime for this movie should have been at least an hour and 40, not a 2 hour long comedy.
Yeah.
And I did feel the runtime going into this and everything compared to where I was in my 20s, just enjoying this stuff in my face with popcorn and laughing my ass off through the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm going to have to give it at least a 5.9 out of 10. Like, I enjoyed it, but there's some parts of the dialogue that does not hold up today.
It doesn't. Standards.
Yeah.
That's some of the stuff that doesn't work with me. But I do have a fun time watching it and stuff like that. If I just want to just put something on, just to laugh at, reminisce about mm-hmm. my times in college and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a fun watch. And I also recommend anyone who hasn't seen it just to watch a Steve Carell movie that you might enjoy. And also, too, you also have Kevin Hart in this movie at the peak of it. Because Reach for the Sky, Willis.
Cameos, yeah.
Yes, you have the cameos. You've got Jonah Hill in this starting out. So, yeah, it's just a 5.9 out of 10.
I think I saw the unrated version originally.
Oh, okay.
Well, the Viagra thing, wasn't that in the unrated version?
Yeah.
It must have been. Was. Yeah, it wasn't in this one.
Okay, yeah, it wasn't in this one because I kept waiting for it because I was like, oh, I remember that scene specifically. I'm like, was that a Mandela effect? Did it never happen?
Right.
Do you know? Yeah, it was in the unrated version.
Let's see. Mello says, looking back and taking nostalgic out of it, I would give it a 6, maybe a 6.5 now because it was funny moments, but show its age and not a classic. Definitely.
It shows its age for sure.
It does.
You know, as I was sitting here and I was hearing you guys talk, it occurred to me, because I'm kind of comparing this movie with Knocked Up, which came out
a year later, I think.
Like a year or two later. What I realized about this movie is that every single side character had like depth and had their own world going on, which is not mm-hmm. something you see a lot happening in these types of comedies. Mm-hmm. Like, usually the friends will just be stand-ins. They will be there when you need them and not there when you don't. And it seems like every single character, like the guy that was constantly cheating on his wife, like, you know he was busy. You know, mm-hmm. even though he wasn't in a scene, you know he was up to no good. And then you have the guy that was obsessed with his ex. Like, you know, he's, mm-hmm. you know, stalking her somewhere. He's off stalking her. And then Seth Rogen's character, I don't really know what he was. He was a script writer. So
right.
It just felt like everyone had kind of this rich inner world, which I appreciate.
Same here. It makes it more realistic, you know.
Yeah. It felt really well developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do have to say the character development is very good. The character arcs are good. Structure's there. It's just some of the dialogue just doesn't hold up, especially the whole how do I know if you're gay scene and then the R word and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, though, I think it's a fun watch if anybody's wanting to check it out. It's not streaming anywhere. I have the DVD still. I have the unrated version.
Oh, it's streaming on Prime.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. You're a physical media collector, right?
Yep.
I love collecting
physical media.
As I was getting ready to watch this movie, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I hope it's streaming somewhere because I'm pretty sure John can't fathom that we don't have it like on a shelf. But our shelves are just full of like smutty romance novels. That's what our shelves are. So.
Right.
That's
just girly things, you know?
But the funny thing is,
I don't own a DVD player.
Don't. See, the funny thing is my friend makes fun of me all the time because I have a PS5 and he's a digital media person. I'm a physical media person. So mm-hmm. I have a slot to put in my disc. And, you know, I matter of fact, I just ordered Jaws, the Vault edition, because because I'm a huge Jaws fan and I also love collecting physical media. And also, too, I just bought Your Next so I can review that movie. And I also got Can't Hardly Wait. So, yeah, I'm a huge physical media collector and stuff. I love it. I love the bonus features. I love everything about collecting it. I just have like having something in my hand that doesn't feel like sand.
Do you remember the first DVD that your like parents bought as a kid?
Yeah, I actually got it. It's the animal with Rob Schneider.
Mm.
That was like my first introduction into DVDs. And also the
Bars was Shrek.
Oh, nice. Shrek, I don't remember when that came out.
Oh, I love Shrek. Shrek is another movie that has held up. Like, it's, I don't know. I love it. I saw a Shrek themed birthday party and I'm like, I'm honestly jealous. It was for like a 25-year-old.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
and I'm
cool.
Like, I'm honestly jealous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's going to be it though. I'm glad that we ended up doing this. I hope that you guys come back again. I had a lot of fun doing this with you guys.
We had a great time.
Yeah, this was so fun. Thank you so much, John, for having us on.
You're welcome, and keep up the great work on y'all's podcast and everything too, because like I said, I enjoy the way you guys review movies. I like how you break down stuff and things like that. You make me think of things that I didn't think before from watching a movie, and I'll even have like little side notes here and there in case I ever want to jump back and give you guys little nods and stuff like that when I review stuff. So you guys gave me a new view of actually doing something, so I do appreciate that. Let's see, let me go ahead and get this for Mello. I missed my Nintendo GameCube and PS2, and then he also says my son loves the Shrek movies. That's awesome, man. That's really awesome.
Yeah, also want to say thank you, Mello, for joining us.
Yeah.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed the live stream and everything. As a matter of fact, I will be back doing another live stream coming up this week. I got Baby Boy with the Tyrese movie that I'm doing with Vernon Kelly from the Is What It Is podcast. It'll be 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, like usual. My co-host Rossi will be doing a show and interviewing somebody as well. And she's got a spinoff show called Rossi's Clubhouse. And it's actually a Sacramento-based podcast, so go on and check that out. I'm also part of the Unfiltered Studios Network. We have the Sleepy G Show. We have Hypno Wellness. And we also have Pills of Support. We have all those people with Unfiltered Studios, so go check them out. But Courtney and Rose, I have a question for you. What movies are you going to be dropping for your next podcast review?
Which one did we just do? We just did Uglies.
Uglies.
Yeah. Okay. We have Uglies coming next week.
Okay.
So if you think everyone has been dragging Uglies, just wait till you hear my take.
And I can't wait to hear that.
I'm actually getting ready to screen The Menu. To see how gory it is.
Yeah.
It's actually not that gory, believe it or not.
Huh.
I did a review. Yeah. Rossi and I did a review. If you want to, check it out. Podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But yeah, it's not that gory. It's not, to be honest with you, I was expecting it to be a lot gory, but it's not. The only thing that is gory is like, there's one scene where a guy commits suicide and everything in the movie, but that's about it. That's like the only goriest thing that I can remember. But there's a lot of dark humor in it. I think you guys are going to love it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to screen it just to check it out and see if we can make it work. There's a lot of movies just with our format that we can't make work. So I'll screen it, check it out. I'm hopeful. But like I told you before, we are delicate flowers. And
yeah. No, I mean, honestly, what you described of a gory suicide, I'm like, oof, immediate red flag.
That's really graphic in a sense, but
that was,
they did the character for it, though it wasn't for the sake of doing it.
Okay.
That's one thing I have to say. It didn't glorify suicide. It was motivation for what the plot was.
Yeah.
And everything about that character, because of the fact that you have a chef who is basically psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
And because of something that character did, pissed the chef off so much that he wanted him to kill his own self because he didn't want him to be able to top the chef.
Oh my God.
Main chef. So it was there to motivate, but also too, was it there for like shock value?
Yeah.
But at the same time though, it is something that is really disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll check it out. If I can be like, hey, like let's fast forward from here to here and then we'll just be like, hey, that guy's dead now. And you know what? Like, that may be fine. But yeah, like I said, we are delicate flowers. So gore just doesn't really mesh. We did do John Tucker and Dale Must Die.
That's not
is that what it's called?
John Tucker Must Die. That's a rom-com.
No, not John Tucker Must Die. The Tucker and Dale.
Oh, a Tucker and Dale movie. I know the movie you're talking about.
Yeah, Tucker and Dale Fight Evil.
Right.
Yeah, no, they put a guy in a wood chipper, Rose.
I literally don't remember this.
Yeah, they did. They did do that in the very end of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Fight Club was kind of gory. I found Fight Club really disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yeah.
Courtney, I do not remember that at all. I swear to God. Did we really do this movie? I don't remember that.
I'm almost 100% certain we did.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, it is in like towards the very end of it where they put him in a wood chipper because I remember that.
I have terrible memory.
Here's the thing. It's like a satire horror movie. It's like comedy horror. It's not
right.
Like... It's not a horror movie. It's satire.
It's like dark comedy.
Yeah.
In a sense. But yeah, if you guys want to go in here, check out this other thing I did with Doom Generation. I had this on the video as well. This is only the video format because I had some stuff that happened. But we ended up doing a Serial Mom review last year.
Mm.
So check that out on the video format. But... also, too, check out the menu. I hope that you guys enjoy that. The movie is great. That movie is great. Yeah, thank you, Mello. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Don't forget, spooky season is just around the corner. I do have some horror movies that's lined up. So always until next time, guys, don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button. Also, too, don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts, where you guys get your podcasts on. And also follow them. Follow Rose and Courtney as well. They do a fantastic podcast. You can actually find their links in the description below. And always until next time, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.